Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Ned Gehring and Rhett Miles, owners of Rocktown Urban Wood. With their combined 35 years experience, these woodworking craftsmen create one-of-a-kind projects from high-quality materials that bring joy and function to your life. They create wood pieces from standing tree to cherished heirlooms. Their goal is to serve the community and environment by providing top-quality woodworking and lumber from locally sourced wood. They partner with local individuals and companies to ensure that their surrounding resources can be used to their fullest potential. Welcome to the show, Ned and Rhett. It's great to have you all on today.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, happy to be here.
This is exciting. I know we had so much fun when we had you on the show not too long ago, because you were on with the collaborative team members for the Urban Wood Program that addresses the invasive emerald ash borer beetle. And I love so much about learning about what you do, that program, and figured and saw that there's so much more that we could share just about what Rocktown Urban Wood does and your story. So I'm very excited to share with the laughers your exquisite craftsmanship that you do and hear more, just like me right now, getting into this interview. So I want to begin with this. Are both of you born and raised in the Shenandoah Valley?
I was not born in the Shenandoah Valley. My parents had spent most of their childhood in Harrisonburg, moved away. I was born in Wilson, North Carolina, and my family relocated to Harrisonburg in 1987.
Oh, when I graduated from high school. Did I just say that out loud? Okay, how about you, Rhett?
Yeah, I was born in the area, raised in the area, and genealogically and genetically, I'm from the area from about the 1600s.
What? That's crazy. Are you one of those families that got land granted by the King of England or something?
No, I think we're just randomly from the area. No ties to the Mayflower or anything like that. Just purely people here.
That is amazing. What incredible legacy. That's great. Okay, well, then I'm excited to ask some more questions as we go on here. Ned, you went to Harrisonburg High School, and Rhett, you went to the rival high school, one of them, Spotswood High School, that's rival to Harrisonburg. You know. I'm Blue Streak because my son was Blue Streak, but I love Spotswood people too. So being from two different high schools, how did you two actually meet and discover your shared talent?
I'd say through a mutual friend in Boy Scouts.
Yeah, mutual friends. Yep.
Yeah, we were probably middle school aged and had some friends. I had a friend from my neighborhood growing up in Harrisonburg that was in the same troop with Rhett. And so they would hang out and I would wander into the yard. They'd be out playing 21 on the basketball hoop or something like that. And that connection kind of, stayed as acquaintances until we were probably middle and high school and got driver's licenses and we're out bouncing around and became really good buddies in our late teens and remain buddies until today. I've always known Rhett to be a very inspired and just high quality artist. And that's not an aspect of the workmanship and craftsmanship that I do. Most everything I do is kind of based around my background in residential construction. And so I knew when we kind of got through the process of thinking about starting a business that we would make a great partnership. You know, I'm a kind of a form and function designer, and so I typically keep things really simple, kind of out of my lack of creativity. And then Rhett brings this amazing creativity to the table. And so between the two of us, I can take the ideas that he comes up with and help to execute them. So.
Wow. Yeah. So then it was, is it through the Boy Scouts? Cause I know in Boy Scouts, you have different projects you have to do and they're crafty and sometimes it would involve cutting wood and making something out of wood. Is that where you first noticed Rhett's talent and vice versa?
Well, Ned got into woodworking a couple of years before I did, being in the house building industry, and he was just really getting into woodworking. And I think there was a social gathering where he brought a woodworking magazine that I had just ended up flipping through because I was curious. I'd never even thought about doing woodworking. And I think within that magazine, I said, I think I can do that. So I started trying that, and it kind of snowballed from there. Ned, just by randomly bringing a magazine with him, kind of inspired the rest of my life. The partnership we have today.
That's really an incredible story. So then Rhett, did you go buy tools, or is it like your dad had tools around and you decided to mess around and create things that way? Talk to us about that part of your story.
My dad wasn't very handy, but he did have some tools. So I started to teach myself woodworking on just what I had. And then over time, I'd have a project that would require a specific tool. So I'd go buy that one. And pretty much every project I did would necessitate another tool until the collection just started to grow from there.
What kinds of tools do you have in your collection? How much time do we have, right?
Some of them sit, you know, a lot of those tools, you when you get them, you're like, oh, this thing's going to be perfect. And then, you know, it in the lifespan of that tool, it doesn't take very long to replace it and come up with something that you like better. And, you know, you find something that's more user friendly, and then you've got something that's a good tool, but it ends up sitting on the shelf or becomes kind of a one trick pony. You know, it's a tool that's able to do a lot of things, but you've just kind of set it to the side to do one thing because it's not quite as user friendly. It takes more time to set up. So you just leave it set up for one particular use.
Wow, there's a lot of moving parts in this business.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of tools.
How about you, Ned, then? So you brought this woodworking magazine to him that ended up basically changing his life. So were you already creating things with wood, or how did you?
My dad had a small wood shop in our basement growing up. And I remember we lived on Mason Street in downtown Harrisonburg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think I was probably like 7, 8, 9 years old, somewhere around in there. And I remember making wooden cars and trucks and trains on the bandsaw with my dad. My grandfather was also a woodworker, and so they kind of shared tools. And so my grandfather would borrow the bandsaw, my dad would borrow the drill press, and they both had table saws and a couple other things. But, you know, I really started to get into just using wood material for things when I was in high school. Built skate ramps, helped a couple buddies build some half pipes. And then once I got into construction right out of high school, I immediately became a tool junkie. It was every time I got a paycheck, I would either go to Rockin' R, go to Lowe's. I don't think we had a Home Depot at that time, but it wasn't that far after that the Home Depot came to town. And it was just like I would allocate a certain percentage of my income to pick up a new router or a new saw or a new drill. And a lot of those tools were kind of from a construction aspect. I remember when I got my first router, which is kind of one of those one trick ponies I've got now. It's a really great tool. And I remember just my imagination expanding, like the things that I could do with this tool, you know, the mortising something, like digging a big hole down into something of irregular shapes. I just remember being so excited. And now I think between Rhett and I, we own 10,
I was gonna say,
12, yeah. 15 routers or something like that.
Okay, so I don't know what a router is.
it's a rotary tool. It's kind of like a drill. Spins at a really high speed. You know, a lot of the drill use that we do, we're spinning somewhere between 200 and maybe 1,000 RPMs. And the spectrum for a router, can't say for sure, but I'm just going to guess that you're somewhere in the like 2,000 to 7,000 RPM, yeah, something like that. So it spins really fast. And you can put different shapes and style cutters on it.
It's one of the most versatile tools. You can do wood joinery that's never going to get seen, but it's highly important for the structure of the thing you're building. Or you can do highly decorative work. So many different things with a router. It's a very versatile tool.
Yes. I love talking to people that are working in other, you know, industries or crafts that I don't know anything about, because then I learn terminology I've never heard of before. So let's So one of the things that you just rolled off your tongue about how to use this router and what it could do, you mentioned joinery. What in the world is that? You said jointery.
Yeah, it's a wood joinery. Some I'm always thinking about, and I know I don't know how to describe.
Okay.
So it's where a leg meets another leg, or it's actually used in all aspects of woodworking. You can have very, very simple joinery to highly complex joinery. So joinery is how you make wood attached to more wood. There are different forms, and there's so many different beneficial aspects to different kinds. It can be simply functioning and for the structure of the piece, or it can be extremely decorative, but still serve that function for the structure itself. Once you start to learn joinery, it's a rabbit hole that you can disappear down forever. There are so many different kinds. There are people who specialize in it. The more I learn about it, the more I realize I don't know.
Most people are familiar with joinery just around their homes. You know, a lot of times you think of a miter, which is when you take a 90 degree angle, say the side of the casing on your door and then the top of the casing on your door. And those are typically joined in one of two fashions. One's a butt joint, and the other would be a miter joint. And the miter joint's when you take that 90 degree angle and subdivide it into two 45 degree angles. And it takes the profile that your molding has on it and just mimics it and returns it to another end. A lot of the times you'll see butt joinery in kind of a more craftsman style house, the old bungalows and things like that. They would incorporate some additional beading and stuff like that into the joinery, but then use a butt joint, that's B-U-T-T, and take one piece and butt it into the other. And those are really simple but very common forms of joinery.
And a very popular one that most people would probably recognize is also dovetail joinery. It's one of the most commonly known ones. People know it's in the side of a lot of drawer boxes, various boxes that are done together with dovetail joinery. So that's just one form of the thousands.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about this, because as you're describing it, one of the things I love about older homes is all that intricate woodwork. And you don't see as much of that today. And, you know, Ned, you've been a foreman in construction. Is there a reason for that? Can you speak on that at all? Is why it was more popular historically than it is now?
Yeah, some of it is related to the resources, the cost of materials. A lot of it is cost of labor. you know, we're losing a lot of the trades. A lot of teenagers and young adults aren't inspired to go into the trades. And so the construction industry is hurting really badly to be able to staff. And so, you know, you think about some of the wainscoting and the elegant window trim, and everything was clear or oak. And that material's gotten really expensive. Mm-hmm. A lot of those materials, when those houses were built in the 20s and 40s and 60s, that material was coming locally. But now with the expanding populations everywhere, there's not enough material in the local areas to supply each and every house with that much clear material. And so we're outsourcing that material. A lot of that material is either coming from other parts of the nation, other parts of North America, and other parts of the world. And every kind of step of that process has a price tag associated with it. And so between the materials being harder to find and more expensive, the labor being more expensive, you know, we think about the cost of building right now, and you know, the price, you know, especially in the last 3 years, the price has just skyrocketed. And it's some of those details and the ornamental things that kind of went to the wayside. And now we're looking at, you know, I want Wi-Fi and I want separate zones for heating and air conditioning and all these different kind of amenities that go into a house that take a precedence. And so a lot of times those moldings and the craftsmanship of those moldings just doesn't fit the budget.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. I can see that. You guys have worked with a lot of tools, you know, over the time. What would you say, Brett, some of the tools that you started with to start creating pieces with that were a go-to, what were some of those, and are they still a go-to for you today?
Yeah, for me, table saw. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer that a table saw, but I mean, there are a lot of woodworkers out there who prefer a bandsaw over a table saw. I love a table saw. I couldn't have a shop without one. So yeah, that's pretty much the one I can't do without. I could do a lot with a table saw. Of course, then there's also the good old fashioned tools that never go out of style, and you should definitely be versatile with a good old hand chisel. It's a very old technology, but still needed in modern woodworking every day.
The hand chisel does the delicate, like, chipping and things like that.
It does everything from really brutal work to really fine detail work. Yeah. Again, extremely versatile, and there are thousands of kinds of chisels. So if you really get into chisels, you can devote your life and your entire wallet.
Okay. You guys are pretty crafty, and you said you were Boy Scouts. And, you know, I am thinking about that derby race with the wooden cars.
Yeah.
So did you guys dominate that then?
I dominated from an aesthetic point of view. I did a skate for the Pinewood Derby race. I did a skateboarder one year. I did a pirate ship, which had sails and flags.
Wow.
And then, yeah, I'm, you know, mast and everything. I don't remember. I think I did it three times, and I can't remember what the third one was. And I bet my parents still have one of those. I actually ended up blowing up the ship for a high school film studies class movie that I made with some classmates. But I think that skateboarder is still around somewhere.
How about you, Rhett? Let's talk about some of your cars.
Pinewood Derby. I loved the Pinewood Derby back then. I was not into woodworking at a young age, but I was into art itself. So my cars were highly decorative. So I said earlier, my dad was not very handy. And now you've just made me think that my dad helped me a lot with my Pinewood Derby car. So I have to apologize for dad to dad.
Yay, dad. Yay, dad. Yes, you guys, go ahead. Tell us more about the cars you created with dad.
Well, apparently my dad helped me pretty well. I remember winning a couple of the Pinewood Derbies. But I primarily was decorating the car. I think Dad helped a lot with the construction of the car.
That's really great. Yeah, you mentioned at skateboarding again, and you also said, Ned, that you made a half pipe. And again, I'm learning so much from you all today. I don't know what that is either. What's a half pipe?
So it's a half of a pipe. If you cut the profile of a pipe in half, you you get 180 degrees. And so a half pipe is a ramp that you can ride up one side, ride back down, ride back up the other side. If you think of snowboarding and Shaun White, the flying.
Yes.
Yeah, is a half snowboard, half pipe master, and so there it's a quarter pipe is essentially a one quarter section of a ramp, and then your half pipe is one that you can go up, go back down, and then that gives you enough inertia to get back up the other side, and so you can just kind of work it back and forth.
That's very helpful, thank you. Yes, he is quite something.
Yes, he is. I really enjoy watching him.
Yeah, he's really excellent. If Laffers, you don't know about him, Google him. That's for sure. You'll be pleasantly not surprised, maybe surprised, because he does miraculous things for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you'll be pleasantly entertained. I should say that. That's Perry Bear. What is the process? Oh, before I get into that, what prompted you guys to get into business together then? Kind of knew each other as friends, but then what was the deciding moment? Hey, let's do this business together.
So in our previous podcast with the Urban Wood Program, we were with Jeremy Harold, and he is 100% to blame for all of this.
I hope he listens to this.
He's heard it before. He knew that Rhett and I were both woodworkers, and I think they had just recently or just getting ready to switch from Harrisonburg Parks and Recreation to Harrisonburg Public Works, and they saw the Emerald Ash Borer on the horizon, and so he had been in contact with Joe Lanin with the Virginia Department of Forestry, and Joe was putting on a seminar in Fairfield, Virginia. The focus of the seminar was urban wood and the quantity of it, the uses for it, and how there's an uptick in around the nation, an interest in trying to maximize those resources. And so Rhett and I went down there to attend that, and we were probably the most vocal there. We were extremely interested. We had a ton of questions. There was a lot of really good information. They had presenters from a couple different universities, some private businesses, and we rode down together. I think Rhett drove and I was a passenger. We made two field trip stops on the way back. Jeremy was like, hey, I got this guy at a sawmill. We stopped at two sawmills on the way back, and we were digging through our phones, making phone calls, and we were inspired right out of the get-go. And the rest is history. I mean, we were in our shop space where we are now within 2 months, something like that.
If less than that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the seminar was in March, and we moved in, or maybe February, and we moved in April.
Okay, yeah, something like that, yeah. But we went to that initial seminar as just two individual friends who happened to be woodworkers. And we left that seminar saying, all right, we're going to start a business and we're going to be serious about this. Like it was one of those life changing seminars.
Yeah, that's really great. You saw a way that you could build a business and help the community and help the environment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really great. What is the process of working with people to create these one-of-a-kind pieces from locally sourced wood? Do you people need to come to you with a general idea of what they want to create? And then how do you work with them to create that?
So we have it can come from many different angles. So a lot of customers come to us with a tree that needs to come down in their yard or a tree that already has come down in their yard, and they want to have something made from it. Sometimes they already have an idea of what they want, a dining room table or a picture frames or a mirror frame. And that kind of helps us steer in the right direction. And then we can help do the design process with them, do multiple designs so they can kind of help help that process along and make sure they're going to get something that they want. We also have a large inventory of lumber, so people can actually come to us with just an idea and we can help supply the lumber and then go through the design process with them. And then we also do have a small amount of stock pieces already made, and that's desks, coffee tables, decorative boxes, mirrors that people can select from in that regard. So we have a lot of different avenues that people can go through the process with. We also, like I said, we have retail material. That the retail lumber is also for sale. So woodworkers themselves can come and buy lumber off of us and then go home and work on their own project. So we try and be multifaceted and help accommodate everybody.
Yeah, Rhett mentioned that, you know, and working through the design process, and Rhett can put a pencil on a piece of paper and sit down and work on something for a couple minutes and come up with this design that is worthy of a frame in its own right. He might disagree with me, but it's a lot all day long. And it works out 9 times out of 10. And when it doesn't work out, the client, the potential client, sees the work that went into creating a design by hand, something that is mind made. It's not computer generated. This is not something that we're pulling off the internet. Almost every time it's something that is made just organically. And even if it doesn't hit their aesthetic or doesn't fit their needs, a lot of the clients see that we put in the time and energy to try to create something that we think that they're going to like. And we might not fully understand what it is that they like, but it at least kind of shows a devotion to it. And they come back and say, yeah, that doesn't really fit with what I was thinking. And we say, okay, you know, start bouncing questions and answers back and forth and say, you know, okay, so you don't like this about it. Is there something you do like about it? Or, you know, what direction can we go in? And then we go back to the drawing board and we come up with something new. And, you know, we just recently were working with a client and we thought that we needed to kind of hit this one mark and we kind of set a priority in that design. We were way off. We would typically go the route that we ended up going, but we thought we needed to go a different route. And by the time it was all said and done, the client was super happy with the design, and we're going to meet with them tomorrow to finalize everything. So, you know, it's one of those things you just kind of have to stick with it. And with Rhett's creativity and his ability to illustrate things, it really goes a long way to keeping everybody on the same page and coming up with at least a template that we can work off of going into the actual build.
Wow. Did you want to add to that, Rhett, anything?
No, he just reminded me that, I do come up with designs, but it's also a nice way to be able to include the customer in the design process. I mean, they can feel free to say, you know, I don't like that design, but can we tweak it this way? And that's great because we've gotten a visual start to be able to work off of. And it includes the customer. They are part of the piece that they're going to have in their home. So it's nice to be able to include them in the design process.
Yeah,
I like that. In fact, all of this work is like making me super hungry. Thank goodness we have some yummy gourmet popcorn to snack on right here, right here in the studio, provided by Preposterous. It's so good, right, fellas?
It is, yes.
What are you guys munching on? I grabbed the cinnamon. I was feeling a little spicy.
I like the cheddar. I'm back on the cinnamon again.
You are?
Yeah, it's really good.
I know. It has this like taste of just perfect blend of that cinnamon spice with popcorn.
It's not too spicy and it's not too sweet. It's a perfect blend.
Mm. Well, classic cheddar is one of my favorites, Rhett.
Me too.
They really have amazing popcorn. And like you guys, they're about partnering with locally sourced folks too. Did you know, Ned and Rhett, that Preposterous creates absurdly flavorful gourmet popcorn using kernels grown right here in the Shenandoah Valley?
I did not know that.
That's amazing. So you guys are like community minded. And their kernels are grown by a local farmer just 10 minutes away from their factory in Bridgewater, Virginia. How about that?
That's cool.
Nice.
Isn't that cool? And to show their love for you, Laffers, they are giving you 15% off today at prepopsterous.com. That's prepopsterous.com. Use promo code LAFF15 and snag some of their delicious popcorn today and join us in all this yumminess. Right, fellas?
Yeah, support local.
Support local. I love it. And speaking of local work, let's get back to you guys. I'd love for you to share some descriptions of some of your favorite popcorn. I've got this Preposterous on my mind, people. I can't stop. I'm still chewing on it. Ned and Rhett, can you share some of your favorite pieces you've created and how long it typically takes to create some of these pieces?
Yeah. So we have a project that we just recently installed, and we have not even shared it yet. We put in a 50-foot walnut and epoxy bar top at Splash's Bar and Grill at the Massanutten and Water Park.
Ooh, fun.
And that project from first conversation to install was about 16 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
The construction was probably a little more than 3 months, and the installation was a Monday through Friday. There was a lot of prep going into that week that we had made just so that things would kind of be ready to go when we got up there. But that project required more energy and material and space than anything I've ever worked on before, other than, you know, building homes on, you know, construction sites. We are really proud of the execution of that. We're working on putting together a portfolio of photos that we can start to share on social media. But that project was overwhelming at times. But, you know, I think we kind of, we kept sticking to the game plan. And you know, with any project, there's always troubleshooting. And that's, you know, the work part of it, really. To see it come to fruition and the level of execution we were really happy with, and the scale of it, it's almost hard to like think back. Seeing it finished in place, it's hard to think back on the amount of work and space and everything it took to put it together.
Yeah.
One of my favorite projects was for a customer. We had a very large walnut that came down on the customer's property, and they wanted it made into various pieces for a house on the property they were remodeling. We ended up making a live edge, almost 12-foot long dining room table out of the walnut tree. Every part of the tree, or every part of the table, the tabletop, the legs, the stretcher, all of it came from the same tree. And it just ended up being a gorgeous process and a gorgeous project to see it from the tree laying on the ground, going through the milling process, drying the lumber, working the material, and then taking it back to a cabin that is within a couple hundred yards of where the tree grew. It was an awesome process. And I also like the fact that we still have a lot of material from that same tree that the customers still would like more things out of. So that project is still giving. One of my favorite ones to date.
Yeah, that turned out beautiful.
Yeah, you look at your gallery online, you know, post pictures that you guys post of your work on social media. It's really, really outstanding work you guys are doing. You make more than tables in all of that. Can you give some descriptions of types of things you make? I saw shelves, I saw ladders, I saw chairs. Kind of give the laughers some wide array of examples of things that you can create or would create.
It is a very wide array. Our monthly outlook seems to be very different every month. We've gone from making gift boxes and picture frames and mirror frames to steady tables, desks, dining tables, coffee tables, things like that. Shoji doors, some rice paper shoji doors. That was a really fun project. Doors in general. What else? Well, all kinds of stuff.
We made a trophy award for the Southern Group of Foresters Association.
Oh, cool.
I really like artistic pieces as well. So, really highly decorative mirror frames, the keepsake boxes. We've done some, we're working on a design for an outdoor sign for a business at the moment. We don't want to get into one specific pigeonhole because we like to be creative. Yeah. The variety is what keeps it fun for us, and we want to challenge ourselves. And we want to have customers challenge us. It's how we get better and grow.
Yeah, we've got a client, local client that owns a music store, and we've done a bunch of display and instrument organization projects for storing violins and cellos and different assorted accessories and stuff like that. And, you know, you think about the restraints that come with, you know, some of these organization things were things that needed to move around so that the shop could kind of always organically change based on inventory and stuff like that. So we're thinking, okay, we got to store a group of cellos. Well, I don't want to be paying for any of those cellos if something goes wrong. So you got to think about the irregular shape of the instrument being grouped together in groups of four, five, six instruments, putting them on wheels and the amount of the value that's in those and the challenges that comes with those shapes and making them mobile and making them structural, making them look good. You know, it's going into a retail space. And so, you know, the from doing tables to shoji doors to bar tops to decorative boxes and keepsake boxes and stuff. I mean, pretty much anything that you can think of that is made out of wood fits the bill. And we love and invite the challenges to doing different.
Yeah. Yeah. Keepsake boxes. Yes. And also chests. I saw chests that, you know, people can
put blanket chests.
Those were pretty too. What's a shoji door?
So if you think about if you've ever seen any like martial art inspired movies,
Japanese rice paper doors.
Yes.
Think of like the what is it like a pagoda?
Yeah.
Where they've got the doors that slide past each other and they've got the kind of like either like a filigree or a printed pattern or something like that. And they're like non-insulated. And generally, solid wood construction with a bit of filigree of wood, fitting into the middle and then back with a rice paper, to provide either, an enclosure or privacy or something like that. You see them a lot in some dressing rooms and stuff like that.
Okay. What would you say? I heard the time frame for the big project at Splashes was 16 months. I imagine, though, that's because it was so huge. What is the average time frame for, say, a table versus a keepsake box or a frame? So, in other words, if somebody came to you and said, I would like this wonderful, unique piece by tomorrow. How realistic is that? You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't say there is an average time frame because none of our projects are pretty much average. turnaround, due to the quantity of projects that we already have ongoing, and then, of course, the entire design and build process of each individual project, it's pretty common for us to be 3 to 6 months out from the first time we talk to the customer to delivery of the piece. There are some projects we turn around quicker than that. Sometimes our time frame goes well, or a smaller project can be squeezed into, in a lot amount of time. But typically our larger dining room tables and larger projects is probably on that 3 to 6 months category. Now, that's if we already have material and it's already dried and ready to go. The projects where a customer has a tree down in their yard and they would like it made into something can take considerably longer because of the drying process of lumber is a game of patience. A couple of projects where we have had that we've gotten a tree from a customer's yard, had it milled and then dried and then made into something is typically over a year. That could be a year and 3 months to a year and 6 months just due to the preparation of the material.
I didn't even think about that there's a drying process.
Oh, yeah. And we try to conserve as much energy in that process as possible. Not only is it more sustainable environmentally, but it's also more economical. Takes a lot of energy to get the moisture from a tree out and turn it into wood that's been stabilized so that it can be used inside your home. And so we've got a process that's a little overcomplicated, but it's energy savings. So, really quickly, if we get a log from somebody to do a project, we set what kind of parameters we need out of that material, out of that log, in order to say it's a dining table. We kind of project how thick we want the top to be, how thick we want the parts and pieces to be, and then we have it sawn accordingly by a local sawmill. And then we take the material and we air dry it. And air drying is essentially just the process of letting air move across the board. And as that air moves across the board, it picks up moisture from the board. The board loses the moisture, more moisture replaces that moisture, more air comes in, picks it up, and so on. And that gets it to a relatively usable state for furniture making. And then we stick it into some solar kilns that are off the grid. They're essentially greenhouses, but they're specifically designed to dry lumber. We don't have to plug those into anything. The sun provides the energy we need to dry the wood further. And then we also have a dehumidification kiln, which is run on electricity. And we use that to get that last little bit of moisture out of the wood and also heat treat it so that there's no bacteria, fungus, mold, bugs, critters living in the wood. It kills anything that's in that wood so that we don't have problems with things like that down the road. Nice. So when you're looking at something like that, that 12-month schedule is pretty fast. A lot of the times we're looking at, 16, 18, 24 months.
Okay. That's amazing. I'm learning so much from both of you today. It's just really great. You also get out in the community and partner with organizations like Harrisonburg Downtown Renaissance to put on really cool workshops. You did a charcuterie board workshop with them. And I would love for you to share with the Laffers more about what that workshop was and what the people that came to it created. Charcuterie boards, but was that quick? And can you tell us more?
It's an evening event. I can't remember how many hours it took. I don't know, maybe like a 2 to 3 hour event kind of thing. It was put together trying to help educate people on the Emerald Ash Boring Beetle.
but as well as getting them involved in the woodworking and getting them to experience a little bit of the urban wood and use it in a project. People would come and we had preset templates, or they could design their own charcuterie board. They would select their piece of wood, transfer the pattern on there, or draw their own design on there. And then while they went inside for an educational spiel on the Emerald Ash Boring Beetle, we helped cut out, sand, and route the edges and further along prep the cutting boards. And then they got to finish sand them and put a coat of sealant on them. And then they had a charcuterie board for life.
Wow. Yeah. You want to add to that, Ned?
Yeah. You know, it was a very mixed crowd. You don't really have to have a lot of experience or know-how in working wood. We had one attendee who was a former client of ours, and she came back to us for additional projects in the future and showed us what she had further gone and processed her charcuterie board. She had a daughter at JMU who was working at X Labs, I think it's called, and they've got like laser engravers and CNC cutters and stuff like that. So she put in like the family name and some stuff like that, and had that stuff like laser cut into the surface of it and further finished the project. And so, you know, essentially that particular workshop is an opportunity to learn about the Urban Wood Program. They also had a chef from the JMU Dining Services come and talk about, you know, pairing cheeses and fruits and meats and crackers. We missed it. We were outside working the whole time. Exactly sure what they were talking about, but that's kind of the gist of it, I believe. And so while they were inside learning about the EAB beetle and, you know, charcuterie and food, we were outside working on the boards. And so by the time they finished up, we had just finished up cutting out their shapes. And we provided some sanders and some hand sanding pads and paper where people could further process and finish off the texture of the boards. And then HDR included some oil. Some mineral oil to saturate the boards and prevent them from taking on moisture as you're slicing lemons and limes and so forth. You know, there was a bunch of different aspects that we put all into one thing, and it kind of showed off a lot of what Harrisonburg has to offer.
That's really great. That's a partnership workshop. Do you all offer workshops outside your wood shop or from inside your wood shop? Are you doing that yet?
We have been asked that a few times, and we have not done it. I think probably the largest hurdle would be insurance, getting either a temporary certificate of insurance to host an event like that, where, you know, there's a lot of on-off switches in our shop space. And when you hit that green button, things start spinning really fast and make a lot of noise, and they become very dangerous. And so, you know, not knowing who's coming, who they're bringing with them. You know, a lot of times, some of the workshops, it's a family thing. You know, mother or father will bring a couple kids, and if everybody's not kind of keeping track of everybody, fingers could end up in the wrong place. And so,
we definitely don't want that.
Yeah, we want to keep a certain level of maturity in the shop. We have had some JMU classes out, and we typically start off with, hey, if it's green or red, don't touch it. Mm. If you're interested in something and have a question about it, come grab one of us and we'll come over and go through it. But typically, if it's green or red and it's in the shop, it's dangerous. And if you're not familiar or comfortable with it, it's even more dangerous. So
I get it.
We'll continue to think about it, and if we continue to get more requests for it, then it could certainly be.
Yeah. Yeah. In the meantime, will you be doing more workshops like that with Harrisonburg Downtown Renaissance in the future? Are you guys talking about that?
Yep. Yeah. We got two coming up. We got one next Tuesday, I think.
Yeah.
The 14th. The 14th. We're going to be doing another charcuterie board workshop. It's pretty much the exact same format. You get a blank. We provide some templates. You draw out what it is that you want, hand it over to us, go inside. Jeremy and Mike put on, actually Mike's going to be outside helping us cut. Jeremy's going to be inside. He's going to be talking about the urban wood utilization program and how, you know, this is exactly what they're doing. They're taking material that has to be taken down from the city of Harrisonburg, and then they're putting it back in the hands of the community and giving people an opportunity to get out, try something new, learn something new. We're doing it at Brothers Craft Brewery. I don't know if there's a drink ticket involved. I'm guessing that there is. You've got an incorporation of a bunch of different partnerships there. That's next Tuesday. And then the following Wednesday, we're partnering Public Works Urban Wood Utilization Program and Sagebird Cider Works to do a birdhouse workshop. We've got all the parts and pieces cut, labeled. Rhett made an instruction manual, which looks legit. It's really good. And so we've got all these parts and pieces. Everybody who attends it gets one drink ticket for a drink from Sagebird Cider Works. The food truck outskirts something. It's a new hot dog food truck there. It's going to be out there serving food. Jeremy's going to be there talking about their urban wood utilization program. And then Rhett and I will kind of give a brief intro into who we are, what we do, and then we'll be hands-on helping people assemble these birdhouses, which it's been a year since we came up with since Charles Hendricks from Gaines Group Architects drew it up, and it's made for a specific bird.
Oh goodness, what bird was that?
I have no idea.
Me for not remembering.
I still definitely remember that.
It's really funny. We got into it, and there are specific requirements for specific birds. Like the birds require these, and it's the diameter of the hole has to be within a 16th of an inch.
Wow.
Yes, it is. It's wild. These are the kind of things you learn when you're working with a bunch of different people. And so these were specifically designed for a particular bird that's native to our area. And this will be the second birdhouse workshop that we'll be doing. And the next one, we'll probably do a different iteration. We'll change some things up, get some different designs, maybe service a different bird. I don't know that we've got, those are the only two that are on the calendar right now.
We've also done a bee hotel project before, that we're helping the city with that, helping with the pollinator program and giving bees a place to nest. And it's just helping out with the different aspects of the city.
Yeah, that's really great. Now, by the time this episode drops, they might miss the March 14th and March 22nd workshop.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I imagine more requests are going to come up. So when you all are doing workshops for Harrisonburg Downtown Renaissance or partnering with other people, is the best way to find out about that, will you post it on your social media? Hey, this workshop's coming up. Or is there a place? Okay.
Yeah, we our social media will be the best place to find that information, as well as, of course, the partners who we are partnering with. They'll be on their social media as well. We're working on advertising further and further into the community.
That's awesome. So if they follow, go ahead. You first.
Okay, we're typically included as a host for that event. And so this event next week would be, you could either go to Brothers Craft Brewing and find out this information. You could go to HDR. Public Works also has Facebook and Instagram posts and events on their page. Likewise with the Birdhouse, Sagebird, Ciderworks, and Harrisburg Public Works and Rocktown Urban Wood on social media has all that information as well.
That's great. Yeah, I wish I would have known about you guys earlier, because then we could have like coordinated that. But I think it's going to still be awesome because they follow you. They'll be able to see the upcoming ones, even if they miss these, which leads me to the last question I have for you all today. Very nicely, is how best can people follow Rocktown Urban Wood on social media or otherwise to connect and get more information?
So we kind of keep most everything on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Rocktown Urban Wood. If we try to push everybody with any requests or questions to go to our email account, which is the name of the business, rocktownurbanwood@gmail.com. And all of those formats are means of communication that both Rhett and I can see, so that if one of us takes the lead on any particular question or customer, both of us can see what kind of communication's going on and be on the same page without having to have a whole nother conversation about a conversation. We can keep it pretty simple. A lot of times we get clients that, and we're the same way, where you got to stop what you're doing in order to communicate in those means. And, you know, it's not always a yes or no, or a simple question and answer. And so once we start a communication level, a lot of the times it's like, hey, I'm going to send you my phone number. Give me a call when you're available. And so we do communicate a lot that way as well.
That's great. Well, laughers, we're going to put their information that they just gave in the show notes for you as well. So you have it. You do not have to try to jot it down while you're working out or driving or whatever you're doing. You just go right to the show notes and grab it. Plus, there we will also have for you that discount promo code LAUGH15 to buy that delicious gourmet popcorn at freepopsterous.com for you in the show notes as well. And thank you so much, Ned and Rhett. This has been such a delightful chat, learning about all things Rocktown Urban Wood. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Hey, Kim, thank you. Thank you for having us. It was a lot of fun.
It is. This is exciting stuff you're doing. So, laughers, to connect and learn more about Rocktown Urban Wood, contact them through their social media or email them at rocktownurbanwood@gmail.com today. Again, we will put that contact information for you in the show notes as well. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend. And until next time, cheers.